page 681, Song of Songs, chapter 2, starting at verse 8. She sings, "Listen, my beloved, look, here he comes, leaping across the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattice. My beloved spoke and said to me, 'Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me. See, the winter is past, the rains are over and gone. Flowers appear on the earth, the season of singing has come, the cooing of doves is heard in our land. The fig tree forms its early fruit, the blossoming vines spread their fragrance. Arise, come, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me.'" He sings, "My dove in the clefts of the rock, in the hiding places on the mountainside, show me your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. Catch for us the foxes, the little foxes that ruin the vineyards, our vineyards that are in bloom." She sings, "My beloved is mine and I am his. He browses among the lilies until the day breaks and the shadows flee. Turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or like a young stag on the rugged hills. All night long on my bed, I look for the one my heart loves. I looked for him, but did not find him. I will get up now and go about the city, through its streets and squares. I will search for the one my heart loves. So I looked for him, but did not find him. The watchmen found me as they made their rounds in the city. 'Have you seen the one my heart loves?' Scarcely had I passed them when I found the one my heart loves. I held him and would not let him go till I had brought him to my mother's house, to the room of the one who conceived me. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires."
Well, congratulations to Jermaine and Valerie on their engagement. I understand they're happily married. YouTube is full of video clips just like that one, often with the same music and often with a flash mob. We're looking at Song of Songs, chapter 2, verses 8, chapter 3, verses 5, and I hope you'll see something in this song that just has that feel. I don't know what the tune was. I don't suppose it was that tune. But it has something of that feel, I think we'll see. Voyager 1 was sent into space in 1977. Apparently it's now more than 13.8 billion miles away. NASA put on the outside of it, and you can just see a gold ring there, and it's an audio-visual disc for, just in case any passing aliens want to know about humanity, they have to have a 1970s record player, but then they would be able to find out all about us. And one of the women on the team, on the NASA team, suggested a good piece of music to have on that would be Beethoven's famous cavatina movement. And she suggested it because it was Beethoven's sort of love song, dedicated, we think, to someone that he never was able to be with. And he'd written next to it a German word, Sehnsucht. A word that is hard to translate, but I'm told it means longing, yearning, a deep unfulfilled ache in our hearts. And the NASA team felt that if you really want to understand humanity, you need to know something about that longing and that yearning and that unfulfilled wish. Why would that be? Why would humanity have that? A very early Christian writer called Augustine put it like this. He said, "You made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you." Sting has a song about it as well. I put some of the lyrics up on the screen there. "Everyone I know is lonely and God's so far away, and my heart belongs to no one. So now sometimes I pray, please take the space between us and fill it up some way." And we go through our lives feeling that space between us and longing to fulfill it. Because God made us to love him, to know him, to be one with him forever as his people. And we have that unfulfilled longing and desire. And one of the ways the Bible speaks about that is by making a link between that love for God that we're made for and romantic relationships. In fact, such a big theme in the Bible that you start to get the idea as you read the Bible that maybe this is the whole reason that humanity created us as male and female with this desire to fall in love and to become one. To point us to the real love that we were made for. To help us understand that. Every part of the Bible makes that link. You'll find it in the Old Testament prophets. You'll find it in the epistles. The Bible ends in Revelation with Jesus marrying his bride, his people, in the final chapters. Isaiah 5, for example, the parables of Jesus. Jesus speaks of himself as a bridegroom. And the last day is a wedding banquet. Isaiah 5 says this: I will sing for the one I love a song about his vineyard. And God is the one that is loved, and he has created his people as being like a vineyard. And he is looking for fruit from that vineyard. He's looking for them to love him back. And perhaps that's why some of our sweetest feelings in this life, and some of our most painful, unfulfilled feelings in this life, are in that area of love and sex and relationships. And maybe that's why this Song of Songs in the Bible, the greatest song in the wisdom that God has for us in his word, is a love song. It is a song about human romantic love. We shouldn't look for little pictures and metaphors in every line that have something to do with Jesus. God is really not mentioned in the book. Perhaps there are hints in some places, but really it is a book about human love. But what we know from the context of the whole Bible, we know where the wisdom of Solomon leads to in Jesus. We know the story of the whole Bible. We know that human love is a metaphor. It is pointing towards God's love for humanity, and it is about Jesus and our relationship with him. As a song, it seems to move through five sort of stages or movements. The last time we began with part one, which I think is about mainly about attraction, the tentative early steps towards love. Will they, won't they? She talks about her feelings with her friends. Does she have the right look? How is she ever going to meet him? And yet when they meet wonderfully, the feeling is mutual and it all works out. She's singing about him. He's singing the same things about her. So attraction, that's part one. And then next Sunday, we're coming to part three of five, the center and middle of the song, deliberately, because this is really where the song is going. And it's about consummation. It's the most clearly sexual part of the song. There's a wonderful wedding in it. And he begins to speak about her. For the first time, he calls her his bride. But for today, we are between those two, somewhere between attraction and consummation. And we are looking at longing. In part two, he doesn't yet sing about her as his bride, his darling. He calls her his beautiful one. He seems to have a pet name for her. He likes to call her his dove. But he doesn't yet call her his bride. And there is that feeling of longing, of aching, of waiting. Let's have a look at it. I think you can divide the song into two parts. His day of asking, her night of longing. That's the reading that we had just now. First part, she is remembering his day of asking. Second part, she's talking about her night of longing. So let's look at the first part of our reading, his day of asking. That's chapter 2, verses 8 to 17. He's asking, he's chasing, he's pursuing, he's wooing. Love pursues commitment. In those days, they didn't necessarily get a ring out of their pocket. They didn't necessarily have Bruno Mars playing in the background and a flash mob, and they weren't in a shopping centre. But you get that feeling and that tone to the song, that he is throwing everything into this and really wants to win her over. So chapter 2 verse 8, listen, my beloved, look, here he comes, leaping across the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattice. She says, listen, she can hear his footsteps. Look, she can see him coming from the distance. He is so eager to be with her, nothing is too much for him. No obstacle is too great. And his passion to be with her reminds her a little bit of an animal like this, a gazelle or a stag, leaping and bounding across mountains or hills. I don't know if you've watched nature programs on TV. Sometimes you see these mountains and these cliffs and these ledges, and you know that it would take a team of rock climbers all day to manage to get up one of these. And then you see an animal that lives there, and it just kind of happily jumps across and leaps and bounds, and you see that it can sort of defy gravity. And I think she's seen these animals, and she's saying, look, he's like that. Nothing will get in his way. He's going to bridge that gap, that space between us. Nothing will be too much for him to overcome. You can imagine Jameen with Valerie. You know, he's found his team of singers online somewhere, and he's snuck away every night, and she's wondering, why is he disappearing late at night? And he's practicing his routine, and every chance he can get, trying to perfect his dancing, and he's choosing the ring. It's that kind of feel to it. He will stop at nothing to reach her. But there is still something coming between them in these verses. She sings about our wall, our plural. And I guess perhaps it brings to mind her family home. She sang in the previous week about angry brothers. For some reason, he's not coming in. He's still outside the wall of the family home. And he's peering through the windows, not one window, lots of windows. He's perhaps going from window to window, trying to find which room is she in, trying to spot her, trying to peep through. He doesn't feel like he could come in. And finally he finds her, and this is what he sings. You might think of Romeo coming to Juliet's balcony and saying those wonderful words from Shakespeare from below to win her over. Chapter 2, verse 10. My beloved spoke and said to me, arise, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me. See, the winter is past, the rains are over and gone, flowers appear on the earth, the season of singing has come, the cooing of doves is heard in our land, the fig tree forms its early fruit, the blossoming vines spread their fragrance. Arise, come, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me. He starts and begins with the same words, verse 10, verse 13. Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me. I guess it must be morning. He's saying, arise, get up. You know, he's got there as early as he can. Get up from your bed, wake up and come with me, be with me. Literally, walk with me, be mine. And he's singing about spring. There's a poem by Tennyson. Spring is the time when a young man's fancy turns to thoughts of love. And it does make sense. When God created the world, he said to everything, be fruitful and multiply. He said that to the plants and the animals and the fish and the birds. And he said it to human beings as well, be fruitful and multiply. And spring is the time when that is happening. The birds and the animals and everything is pairing up and producing new young. Or perhaps it's the spring of their lives. And they feel they've reached that point in their lives now. They're ready for love. And they've fallen for each other. But somehow she is slightly out of reach. He sings this beautiful poem about spring to win her over. Come be with me. But there's something about her that is not quite his. She's not available to him yet. Verse 14. My dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the hiding places on the mountainside, show me your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. He longs for the sound of her voice, the sight of her face. If he's like a stag leaping across those mountains and cliffs, she's like a dove settling on those very difficult ledges. This is what doves do. They're on the hidden places. You can't, you know, I guess it's to keep them safe. They're not quite in sight. They're out of reach. And that's how he feels about her. He is eager to overcome every obstacle, but she's not his yet. She's not quite there. And the wonderful thing is that she is saying yes to him. He's saying, come and walk with me, be mine. And she says in verse 16, my beloved is mine and I am his. They belong to one another. He chases her, he invites her, She's just a little bit out of reach still. And there are also some dangers to their relationship. Verse 15. It's hard to tell this in English. I don't know if you study any other languages. In some languages, you can tell whether something is male or female and whether something is singular and plural. And there are more clues. And there are more clues in the Hebrew that this is written in. In the English, you can't tell so easily. But I think it looks like verse 15 is not, they're not really singing this to each other. This is the two of them together singing to people out there. It doesn't say who. Maybe to everyone and anyone. And saying, look, help us as a couple. Help us with the dangers that we have in our relationship. Catch for us the foxes, the little foxes that ruin the vineyards, our vineyards that are in bloom. Now, we know she works in the family vineyard. If you like to grow things, and I know some of you do that, you probably are not going to be a big fan of foxes. You're not really going to like them because they get into your property, and they just when things are about to grow, they're not quite ready, they're not quite finished yet, the foxes will get in there and damage something that is blooming and ruin it and trample it and devour it. And the little foxes are the worst because you can put up nice protection and fences, but there'll always be some little creature that can get under it or through it and find some tiny gap and come in and spoil things. And I think what they're saying here to the wider world is that their love is not yet ready. It's growing. It's beginning to blossom. But it's not yet reached the point where they should really enjoy it together. And so they're going to need some help from everybody else. You know, don't let all the little things kind of sneak in and devour it and ruin it and wreck this before it's really fully grown. And so, you know, verse 16, he is browsing in the lilies. I don't really know quite what that means. We know that she's a lily. She says, I'm a lily. He says, yes, you're a lily earlier on. Well, he's browsing. When I go to the shop, sometimes I browse and I do a bit of window shopping, but I haven't actually chosen and I haven't actually bought something. I haven't taken it home. And she is singing to him, look, I think maybe you should go home for the night. That's what I think she's saying in verse 17. Until the day breaks, until it's morning time, you know, we've had a day, you woke me up this morning, we've had the day together, but now until the day breaks and the shadows flee, turn my beloved. And be like a gazelle or like a young stag on the rugged hills. Look, until it's morning, you're going to have to turn and go away. You can do your stag routine again, you know, where he rushed over the hills in the morning to come and find us. And go and be that again, but this time turn away and go back the way you came. Retrace your path until the next day. Well, the details are not all very clear in the song, but it has that feeling that she is out of reach. And this is a beautiful thing, a wonderful thing to feel this way. But there is just a need to hold back and wait. It's not to be yet. His day of asking. And then we'll come on to her night of longing. That's chapters 3, verses 1 to 5. She's waiting and wanting and aching to be won. If the first part of what we've just heard is saying that love pursues commitment, that love pursues commitment, then this second part is showing us that love longs for consummation. Love longs for consummation. Chapter 3, verse 1. All night long on my bed, I looked for the one my heart loves. I looked for him, but did not find him. Well, she sent him home for the night. And now you sense that maybe there's part of her that wished that she hadn't. I don't know whether she's dreaming or whether she can't sleep or whether she's kind of waking up and turning to the pillow and wishing he was there, but he's not there. But she is longing that he would be with her in her bed at night. Chapter 3, verse 2. I will get up now and go about the city through its streets and squares. I will search for the one my heart loves. So I looked for him, but did not find him. The watchmen found me as they made their rounds in the city. Have you seen the one my heart loves? She's so desperate, you know, she sent him home for the night, but now she's getting up in the middle of the night and going, whether this is in her imagination or whether she does, we don't know, but she sees herself going around the town looking for him. Where does he live? And the security guards that are working overnight want to know what on earth she's up to, and she asks them, well, have you seen him? Do you know where he is? Verse four, scarcely had I passed them when I found the one my heart loves. I held him and would not let him go till I had brought him to my mother's house, to the room of the one who conceived me. She's out at night. She wants him in her bed. She finds him. And you might be surprised that she doesn't that she takes him home to her mum's house. That might seem a bit strange to you. It's not really what tends to happen in a lot of songs and a lot of movies. Songs by Ed Sheeran, full of people getting together in the back of a taxi on a friend's sofa. There's a tabloid rumour about Boris Becker conceiving a child with a waitress in a restaurant in a storage cupboard, which sounds not only very unromantic, but also extremely uncomfortable, I would imagine. But that's not what she wants here. She doesn't just want a physical relationship with him. In secret, where no one will know and her mum won't know, she wants to bring him back to the family home. Remember, he was outside the wall of the family home before, asking her to be his, and she said yes. And now she's saying, I'm not going to let him go until he's in my family home and part of my family. And she's singing about it as the room where her mother conceived her. You see, if they are going to make love together, she wants that to be a part of that family life. Just as her mother conceived her in that family home, she wants to be with him forever, and she wants them together to continue that family. For this song, you see, it's not just about a physical relationship. It's about other people. It's about family. It's about community. It's about being one for life. She's sounding very much like Genesis 2 here. We read it a few weeks ago, creation. And we read, a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. That's what she has in mind. That's what she is longing for and struggling to wait for. We have sometimes thought that sex is just fulfilling a physical desire. But here is something much more beautiful and romantic. And it's about two lives joining, and two families joining, and two homes joining. It's a public thing that involves other people. It's a lasting thing, a permanent thing. And it's a committed relationship. And as she comes to the end of singing about how she feels, to the end of this part two of the song, she turns again to her young female friends and she sings to them exactly what she sang to them at the end of the last part of the song. It's perhaps a repeated chorus. Chapter 2, verse 7, chapter 3, verse 5, pretty much the same, almost identical. Chapter 3, verse 5, daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. She sings about the gazelles and the does. Do you remember them from earlier? You remember he was a young gazelle racing across the mountains to reach her in the name of love that pursues and longs and overcomes. And now it's the female name for the same animal. She's saying to her friends, look, in the name of that passionate love, in the name of that desire, in the name of that longing and that aching, she says, be careful. Don't arouse or waken up. Don't wake up those feelings too soon. He was outside the window saying, wake up. Come be with me. He's saying, well, don't do that too soon, she's saying. Don't wake up love in you or with someone before the time is right. Because once those feelings have been stirred and have begun, we're all going to find it very hard to dampen those down again. So she says to her young friends, be careful about this. She is in a wonderful relationship and it's heading to marriage. The very next words are going to be the beginning of a wedding. But she's saying, wait. It's too good to get wrong. And it's worth waiting for. Well, how are we doing at waiting? Some people reading the song might wish that it was a bit more clear and a bit more specific about what is okay and what is not okay. And there is some help with that in the rest of the Bible. There are some laws in the Bible, don't commit adultery. There is some wisdom in the Bible about finding someone who shares your faith. and more besides. But this song is not focusing on what we shouldn't do. There is a place for that, to understand what the Bible says we shouldn't do. Thou shalt not. Maybe we've got the used to that idea that when it comes to sex and relationships, the Bible is going to put up a big no entry sign and it's all about what you can't do. But instead of that, this is a song about what God is for, not what God is against. And what he's created as a good and wonderful gift. The problem with rules is they only get you so far. If we keep them, we feel proud that we've kept them. If we fail, we feel guilty that we failed. And the song, I think, is speaking more to our hearts, saying, wouldn't you want this? Wouldn't this be better? Wouldn't this be worth waiting for? And far more precious, a love that pursues commitment and longs for consummation, love that is wonderful and right and good, love that waits for that public, permanent, lasting commitment between a man and a woman in a lifelong marriage. He's saying, don't let anything spoil that. Don't let any little foxes creep in and get through the barriers that you protect it with and begin to spoil what could be there and what could grow in the future. So how are you doing with waiting? I watched a TV movie a while back. It wasn't very good. I can't even remember what it was called. It was a science fiction thing. But I just remember a scene. There was a teenage boy in it, and he had a crush on an older girl, and he fantasizes about it. And in his fantasy, in his imagination, she flirts with him. She smiles at him. They talk to each other. And she just begins to unbutton just her clothing, just slightly, and he is just, this is almost too much for him, this is very exciting. And later on in the movie, the older girl realizes that he has a crush on her, and says, okay, sure, why not, let's have sex then. And he's looking kind of terrified and shocked, and not what he was expecting at all, and he's saying, okay, I mean, should we maybe talk first, or maybe a date? And she laughs at him and says, where are you from, the 1950s? Kids these days don't wait. And you're really left feeling sorry for kids these days. And thinking what a beautiful thing his fantasy was and what an ugly thing the reality turned out to be. God's given us these wonderful desires, and it is meant to be a beautiful thing that evolves and that grows and that leads to two people being together for good, sharing their bodies because they're sharing their lives, because they're being intimate, because they're open to each other with everything. How are you doing with waiting? If you're falling for someone and you're not married to them, it is worth waiting. It's too good to spoil. It won't be easy. It's not meant to be easy to wait. If it's a struggle to wait, then that is a good sign. It's a sign that the relationship is going somewhere. It's not necessarily a sinful thing to find it difficult. In fact, if you don't find it difficult to wait, maybe it's not the right relationship after all. It should be like that. And that is sung about. They find it really difficult to wait in this song, and it's celebrated in the Bible as good. But it is important to wait, to protect it until the right time. And it may be right to do what they do and to get help from others with that. Make it something that you maybe not going to manage just on your own, and just getting other people to... Perhaps we should all be thinking, how can we help couples to wait and not make it too easy to rush into something that will turn out to be wrong. For some, waiting might seem as if it looks like it's going to be a lifelong project. And that's harder, isn't it? I mean, it's one thing to wait for a relationship when you're engaged and you can see it's on, you can count down the weeks and the months. It's another thing to wait when you're dating someone and you're thinking, well, maybe this will go somewhere, maybe it won't. But it's another thing to feel that you're not really waiting for anything in particular, and that no relationship is ever likely to come. And for some, it may feel like that. The season of spring, maybe you feel that's past, and summer is reaching an end, and it's starting to look a bit like autumn. And maybe it won't happen. For some people, it might be the only opportunities in their lives have been with people who just weren't right, not believers, and they quite rightly felt that they didn't want to go in that direction. And it must be, I guess, tempting to wonder whether waiting is really worthwhile. What am I waiting for? What is it that I'm being careful not to spoil if nothing's coming at the end of this waiting? And I want to say there are two reasons why it is still worth waiting. The first one is less important. The second one is more important. The first one is that we actually never know what might happen in the future. You can never really reach a stage in your life where you can rule out a relationship that might lead to marriage. You do hear of people falling in love well into their 80s and 90s and living a short but happy married life together. I think of a Christian friend years ago who confided in me that he'd only ever been attracted to people of the same sex. But because he was a Christian, he was convinced that that wasn't the right thing for him. He just didn't think that that was the pattern that God intended when he made us, and that it might be tempting, but that he didn't think it would really be what God wanted, and it wouldn't really work in the way that God intended. But he felt really low about that sometimes, because he felt like in his mind, not only was he not about to have a relationship, but he couldn't see how he would ever have a romantic relationship or enjoy a family or children or any of those things that lots of people might hope for. But one thought was some comfort to him when it was pointed out to him that you actually, for a really good marriage, it's not that helpful to be attracted to everybody of the opposite sex. What's really helpful is if you're just attracted to one person. And that even for someone who is strongly attracted to the same sex, if there is just one person they find very attractive, then you can't actually rule it out. And in fact, in his case, he did find a Christian girl that he was very attracted to, and she was very attracted to him, and he was very open and honest about his feelings, and she helps him with them, and they are very happily married and have been for a long time. He's my sort of age now. That's the first reason to wait. The less important reason, you actually can never really rule out that you might be waiting for the picture of marriage in the Bible. But the second reason is much more important. And that is because we are all waiting for the relationship with Jesus. We've begun it already, and there's a longing to see him face to face at the end of our lives. And we don't want to do anything that might spoil or hinder or keep us from being with him forever. No human relationship can give us what he can give. That's the real longing that we're made for. Whoever we might fall in love with and marry is going to be as sinful as we are, at least. And the relationship will soon come to an end when we die. Life is very short. But we are made for an eternal relationship with a perfect partner. Jesus has already proposed to us. You know some of the romantic songs, the guy says, I'd do anything for you, I'd even die for you. Well, Jesus has. He is so devoted to us, he would go to any lengths to win us over. And he speaks to us day in, day out, calling to us, saying, come and be mine, and I will be yours. True love seeks commitment, and Jesus wants that from us. He wants us to say, I do. And we are left longing for that day when we find real fulfillment and real satisfaction. And we're one with him.